This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Last week, a Wake County jury ruled against the News and Observer and one of its reporters in a libel lawsuit. The jury ordered the paper to pay $9 million in damages to a government official with the State Bureau of Investigation. Beth Desmond filed a defamation lawsuit against the NNO for a series of stories about the SBI that was published in 2010. We're talking with Jason DeBruin today, WUNC data reporter who's been following the story. Welcome back, Jason.
Hi, Frank.
Tell us about the case and the investigative series in question.
Yeah, exactly. So back in 2010, you might actually remember this was a pretty big story. There were pretty significant issues at the State Bureau of Investigation. In fact, some of these issues are being brought up again now in the campaign, as you know, Roy Cooper was the head of the AG's office. But there were several problems and policies that the SBI had in place that the News and Observer took a really hard look at, and that's what this series was about.
Now, there was one individual in this case who brought the suit. It's Beth Desmond. What was her claim?
So she was a ballistics analyst, and the News and Observer story sort of, in one of the stories in the series, really took a hard look at her. It looked at ballistics analysts in general, but really sort of picked her as a case in point, and at one point said that she had falsified evidence. Now, what Mandy Locke, the reporter in the News and Observer, meant by that statement was that in her ballistics report, she put something different than what she ultimately testified in a jury trial. And so to the News and Observer, they wrote that that was falsifying evidence. Beth Desmond said that a natural reading of that was more that she had, you know, maybe tampered with evidence, even though she didn't do that. And the News and Observer, you know, didn't intend to say that she tampered evidence. The term falsified evidence became something that in this libel trial, the jury was able to focus on and sort of really take a hard look at.
And then there were other questions, too, about what other outside observers, analysts, and experts said about Beth Desmond's performance, and that became part of the story.
It did. In fact, what was sort of interesting is that in this libel trial, they being able to use the truth as an absolute defense was actually not allowed. So the entire trial hinged on not the accuracy or the truthfulness of the story or the series in its entirety, but how accurately Mandy Locke and the News and Observer portrayed the statements of outside experts. So for their story, you know, Locke did first a lot of reporting on the SBI and then basically took what they were doing and presented that to outside experts, you know, including others from even outside the United States, and said, okay, here's what's happening in North Carolina. Does this check out to you? Then in the story, she sort of synthesized the comments from, you know, five or six different experts, and then that's how she came to some of her statements that were saying that there were large problems within the SBI. At the libel trial, some of these experts were then brought in front to testify and essentially said that they were either, you know, wholly or partly misquoted, taken out of context, et cetera. Even though they also testified that, and one guy in particular, he said he talks in rambling sentences and that it could be hard for anyone, let alone, you know, a journalist to sort of interpret what he's saying. Even so, he said that he was taken out of context, and therefore that's sort of one of the things that the jury was able, in this libel trial, to look at.
So maybe we should step back here and see what you have to prove if you claim there is libel, because to some extent, intent or reckless disregard for the truth is part of this, and not just whether or not it came out okay, right?
Yeah, and that's a huge thing. So there's the two-part. Oftentimes you get, as a news organization or a media organization, you get to use the truth as an absolute defense. You know, as we said, that was not allowed in this case, which is already a little bit out of the ordinary. And then in the second hand, as you're saying, you have to not only prove that the news organization took something out of context or misrepresented the statements, but also that they did so with, you know, intentionally or at least had some serious doubts about what they were printing. And the experts that testified, even though they said that they were taken out of context, they all said they had absolutely no reason to believe that Mandy Locke, the News and Observer editors, you know, did this with any kind of intentionality or that they even had serious doubts about what they were reporting. Still, the jury came back and found guilty.
The jury found guilty, and the ultimate award was $9 million. Now, that may have to come down, but maybe you can break that down for us a little bit.
Sure. And I should also put in a distinction here. I've said guilty a couple times. It's not technically guilty. It's a civil trial, so maybe just that sliver of delineation. But yes, The jury awarded $1.5 million initial verdict and then $7.5 million in punitive damages. Now, in North Carolina, there's a cap on the punitive damages for this kind of a trial. So the News and Observer very likely going to file an appeal, have said they're going to do so. And you'll see that come down to maybe $4.5 million. So the ultimate verdict will be in the neighborhood of $6 million. But yeah, initially it was 7.5 plus 1.5 for a $9 million verdict.
So let's talk about how common this is, because libel is notoriously difficult to prove in this country, and or to win a libel suit in this country. And even when that happens, often those verdicts are overturned on appeal. Give us a sense of how uncommon this ruling is.
Very much so. It's really interesting. About 7 out of 10 libel cases never even make it to trial. They're either thrown out by a judge, or, you know, there's some sort of a settlement reached. In America, you know, the First Amendment right to freedom of speech, freedom of the press, is very strong. It's one of the things that we hold very strongly to in this country. And, you know, obviously I'm a reporter, I think rightly so. But even in general, I mean, I think Americans generally have the notion that freedom of speech really applies to anything. Even, you know, even if you don't like what somebody's saying, it's still their right to say it. Generally speaking, about 7 out of 10, like I said, never make it to trial. What's interesting, though, is when they do go to trial, plaintiffs tend to win, and they actually tend to almost punish media in some ways. They'll see this as a case in point to sort of like get after the media if they want to. So in those cases where they do go to trial, in fact, plaintiffs win more than half the time, and you do see some of these larger multi-million dollar verdicts that come down during a jury trial. Now, after appeal, that oftentimes gets reduced, but it's almost like the jury sees a chance to smack down media in general, and they're sort of taking this out on, you know, one media institution in particular.
Well, and in this case, Beth Desmond, who brought the case, was able to demonstrate the amount of damage, psychological damage, this right. did, and she appeared before the jury to make that case. Am I right?
Indeed, yeah. And so she had a psychologist that was testifying on her behalf. She testified herself about having anxiety attacks as a result of this story. That was also interesting because the SBI, whenever the story came out, basically said, we don't believe the story. It seems false to us, and did not in any way punish Beth Desmond. But still, she had anxiety attacks afterwards, and that was sort of what the jury was also allowed to consider.
What percentage of these cases that do, as you say, very few ever make it to trial? When they do, they often find in favor of the plaintiff. It can be a very emotional trial. But then, how often are they appealed, and how often are they denied on appeal?
Yeah, nearly always appealed. So I was looking through some history. There's some good data. I have to give the Media Law Resource Center a shout out. They have tracked all cases filed against media since 1980. And what they found is that there's about 600 of these trials that have happened
nationally,
yep. Going back to 1980. So again, I mean, we're talking 600, and it's like 650, I think, going back to 1980. So again, this does not happen often. In those cases where there is a verdict in favor of the plaintiff, they're, again, nearly always appealed. In only 20% of those cases does on appeal the plaintiff then hold through. So again, you know, you're looking at 4 out of 5 times where an appellate court will then rule against what the jury said, and therefore ruling in favor, or at least partly in favor, of the media company.
So do we know, will this particular verdict be appealed?
It will definitely be appealed. The News and Observer has already said it will do so. Their lawyers have already sort of put the wheels in motion to file for an appeal. There's grounds to believe that there is a possibility that this will be overturned, in part because you have the absolute truth defense that really wasn't allowed during this trial. So there's reason to believe that there's at least a chance that this will be overturned on appeal. But, you know, of course, as it stands right now, the verdict is in, and in order for the News and Observer to win, it will need to be overturned.
And what has the NNO said about this?
They've stood by the reporting. John Drescher, the executive editor, has long now pointed out that their series of stories from 2010 resulted in numerous changes at the State Bureau of Investigation. And in fact, that's true. I mean, you can check the tape. There were independent reports that also came out afterwards that essentially confirmed what the News and Observer had reported back in 2010. But there again, all of those things were not allowed in this particular trial, and that's one of the things the News and Observer and their lawyers have argued that should have been allowed, and why they're arguing why they're having a strong chance on appeal.
All right, Jason, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Jason DeBruin is WUNC's data reporter. You can find more about his research on libel cases at our website, stateofthings.org. There you will also find a list of places where you can vote. Early voting has begun in the state of North Carolina, and if you want to know where you should go if you choose to vote early, go to our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we'll talk with Attorney General Roy Cooper about his campaign for governor, and you'll hear that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay with us.